Hello again. Still with us in studio, Barry Ward, Fine Gael TD for Dunlera, Dunnacha O'Leary, Sinn Féin TD for Cork South Central, and party spokesperson on foreign affairs and defence, Paul Gogarty, Independent TD for Dublin Midwest, and Claire Scott, political correspondent at the Sunday Times. Of course, you can still get us if you want to text us 51551. WhatsApp us on 0870 32 32 32. Claire. We'll get into the statements on policing of the Dáil in a moment, but the CSO laid out the landscape as far as crime stats go. What did they tell us, and what period did it cover?
Pretty stark figures just over the course of a year, I think from September 2023 to September 2024. And crime just appears to be up across the board, really. We got burglaries are up 10%, I think was one of the main figures. But violent burglaries as well, up by 15%. Theft of cars up 6%, theft of people up 20%. Increases in attempted murders up 3%. Then there was also drug importation up 84%, shootings up 20%. There was a decrease in organised crime. But then another stat, theft up 7%, and 6 out of 10 crimes of theft were from retailers. And I think Vincent Jennings of the, he's the chief executive of the Convenience Stores and News Agents Association. He was on News at One the other day, and he outlined that he thinks that figure in particular is particularly underrepresented, because a huge amount of retailers won't report theft, because it takes about 2 or 3 days for Gardaí to follow up on any reports. So they tend to just abandon it.
OK. And statements in the Dáil then today. Jim O'Callaghan, I think, had the new Justice Minister taken, is his first opportunity to address the Dáil and outline some of what he intends, and other parties having laying out their own concerns and where they think his priorities should be. Give us a flavour of that.
Yeah, well, we've heard a lot from the Minister over the last number of weeks, just in relation to what his priorities are going to be. And he kind of echoed those today, and he acknowledged, you know, that there needs to be more Gardaí operating within communities. We have about 14,100 Gardaí at the minute. He said he wants to ramp that up. Now, he did outline that there has been a recruitment drive campaign. He said it went relatively well, which I don't think speaks to it going completely according to plan, but we'll find out how that went eventually, I presume. He also said he wants to see increased resources for DESH schools in areas of deprivation. But he also, because he outlined that, you know, policing can't just solely rely on, I suppose, you know, the ramping up of the police force. It has to come from within communities as well, and community support and youth outreach as well. He also discussed the idea of, you know, body cameras. He wants to see more Gardaí with body cameras, and also the facial recognition technology, which people remember from the last Dáil. It became an issue of contention within that coalition. The Greens weren't particularly in favour of it, but we're going to see legislation come forward in relation to that. And he also raised concerns around the conditions for granting bail. It was a Sinn Féin concern as well. And he wants to see guards being able to ensure if they believe that someone shouldn't be granted bail because they may go out and recommit a crime. He wants to see that Gardaí will be able to step in relation to those issues as well.
Right, that's following from the 1997 referendum, where people voted in favour of that, but there may be some level of dissatisfaction with how that's implemented. Matt Carty, Dunnacha O'Leary's colleague, raising the case of Shane O'Farrell and the man who killed him off his bike, being out on bail at the time. Barry Ward, what would you say, out of what you heard from Jim O'Callaghan today, is going to get the most effort over the lifetime of the government?
Well, I think Garda numbers have been for a long time a major focus. But the thing that I'm actually most interested in is what he said about targeting DESH schools. And I actually had meetings this week with DESH schools in my own area, where they've identified programs that they can run to help bring children into the mainstream and make sure that they're included and that there are avenues for them.
There was also some mention of psychological resources in those communities.
Exactly, yeah.
As well.
The particular thing we were talking about this week was sport, but there are lots of other things. And there are all kinds of resources that should be deployed in areas where we can identify identify a disadvantage that very often can be linked to a lead to criminality. And that it isn't just about tackling people at the point where a crime is committed. It's about diverting them away from a situation where they get into that mode in the first place. So I was really pleased to hear him say that. But I think police numbers have got to be there. What he did refer to, which I thought was very important, is that the overall workforce in the Gardaí has increased hugely. And that's a programme that Helen McEntee brought in as minister. The civilianisation of certain functions within Ó Gardaí Síochána and successive budgets now have provided for money to bring civilians in to do the jobs that uniformed Gardaí were doing. Now those uniformed guards can be out on the street, can be doing the jobs that they were trained to do. So whether it's taking reports or stamping passport forms or whatever it might be, what we really need is a tested Gardaí in uniform who can do the job to be available to the public to do that job.
Okay, before I just go to the other members of the panel, you say that the DESH schools and investment in areas with high indications of deprivation being a priority. Would you like to see that linked to Garda spending a particular percentage where the two of them would be a relationship between how the money is spent in the Department of Justice?
I don't mind how it's done. I don't know if tying the hands of particular spending channels is the way to do it, but I think what's important is that we do acknowledge that there is a link between the two and that we need to invest in people at an early age so that they have options rather than lack of options.
Okay. The atmosphere at Donegal Éire today seemed to be, you know, across opposition benches and with government contributions as well of new minister, we'll give him a fair hearing, mark his cards as to what the priorities are. What jumped out at you and what would you like to see? Or what's your party's priorities from what has been said today?
Look, it is a new minister and we will see what he will bring. But I suppose in terms of this government, it's not a new government. And Fine Gael have been in power since 2011. And what jumped out to me is that it felt like the same debate as we've been having for years, to be honest. Since Templemore was closed, which was a really, you know, catastrophic decision, really, and set the Gardaí back very significantly. But
COVID, though.
I meant during the cutbacks and the recession and when it was permanently closed, semi-permanently closed for, 3 years or so. That was a disastrous decision. We've been paying the price for that ever since. The numbers haven't recovered ever since then. And even during the course of lots of talk in terms of civilianisation, hasn't really happened, to be honest, in any significant scale. The Gardaí numbers in most stations across the state are roughly about or lower than they were in 2018 or 19, right across the state. So it's really, really challenging for Gardaí to be able to provide the service that they need to in terms of, you know, there's large towns out there, you know, 15,000, 20,000 people, there might be one squad car out at night. And if there's an incident and they're dragged to another suburb or another town, then there's no squad car in a position to respond. That's, I think, the fundamental issue in terms of response to crimes.
And I think everyone across the debate was kind of convinced of the need for if only for demographic reasons, for more Garda numbers. But Paul Gogarty, Garda powers, did anything strike you as interesting, or did you have any proposals yourself on the issue of Garda powers, or any concerns indeed?
No, I don't have concerns, for example, with cameras, unlike my former Green Party colleagues, for example. I think any sort of technology that helps identify people involved in criminal activity is to be welcome, to be quite honest. We've got to the stage now where we have to make choices in terms of consequences for actions, and we're not really seeing it. It was mentioned about the investment in, say, the DESH side of things. I mentioned years ago when I launched the 50 Steps to a Better Education System, the High Scope Perry Preschool, where a €1 investment in quality early years education has a €7 return. And that's also in terms of the costs of crime, for example. So you have to start at a very early age and keep it true. Just throwing a few sprinkles at DESH schools isn't going to sort it out. And for example, we have youth diversion programs where you used to be able to bring the friends of people who are identified as potentially being in trouble. Then it was brought back to just the kids themselves. And it's not a very interesting or entertaining type of diversion for them. So I think we need to look at it at that level, invest more in community Gardaí. So I wouldn't be looking at the powers of Gardaí. I'd be saying the types of Gardaí have more community Gardaí because they're able to identify stuff on the ground. At the same time, in terms of resourcing the Gardaí, traffic police have a dedicated traffic section that can focus on one area, allow the guards to concentrate on their core activities, I would say would be another element.
Barry Ward, the stop and search powers, Jim O'Callaghan said he promised more detail on stop and search. So Gardaí do have stop and search powers at the moment. What do you interpret that to mean? What detail is needed, or clarification or expansion?
Well, as you say, guards do have stop and search powers, but they have to have a reasonable basis, a reasonable suspicion for exercising that power. My own personal view is actually that these protections are very important for individuals. Now, obviously, I work in the criminal courts, so I see sometimes how they can be exercised capriciously. But
this is an area where some people feel that their community is over-policed, that the use of stop and search powers.
And there's no doubt that that is true. And it is a reaction from Gardaí to a situation where they feel the need to do that. And I'm not making criticism of individual Gardaí, but I think the protections that exist in the Constitution are there for a very good reason, and they've stood us in good stead. It doesn't mean that Garda powers can't be increased. At the moment, in fact, I think Gardaí need to be provided with additional powers in certain circumstances, but they also need to be informed about what those powers are. Most Gardaí will refer to the power that they have under Section 23 of the Misuse of Drugs Act to conduct a search in a public place and things like that, and they wouldn't be aware, in my experience, of many other powers that might be available to them in alternative scenarios. So I'm not averse to there being more power, but I do think there is a fundamental protection that needs to be maintained.
Okay, Donna Colera, what would you like to see that detail cover that Jim O'Connell was talking about today on stop and search?
It is an important power, and it is an important power that the Gardaí need to be able to have. There's a balance to be struck now. You can't have Gardaí stopping people without safeguards, without balance or anything like that. I think the issue in terms of bail that was flagged is a significant one. Obviously, you know, bail is appropriate in certain circumstances, but in other circumstances where you have repeat violent offenders and people being released on bail and committing further crimes, it's very understandable why people are very frustrated at that. I would just flag just very briefly, and I don't dispute at all the connection between poverty and crime, which can be an issue. But I would say as well, like, it is important that we're talking about educational disadvantage for educational disadvantage sake as well. Even aside from, you know, that it's of concern to us when it, you know, causes crime. The vast majority of people who come from a Daesh school will never come to the attention of a Garda. And I know that's not what the panellists are saying or anything like that. But I would make the point, like, that, you know, this is an issue that I and others from the opposition, in terms of educational disadvantage, in terms of not only investing more in Daesh, but I suppose earliers in disadvantaged communities as well.
So you support what Paul Gogarty was saying there a moment ago?
I think so, yeah. And, like, I mean, there's programmes such as, you know, the Early Start that, you know, only has 1 year compared to the ECC for 2 years that actually need to be, I think, are neglected. Because, look, if we're talking about disadvantage and we have the debate every year about how many people from Daesh schools go on to third level, and there more can be done in terms of supporting them, the reality is kids from disadvantaged backgrounds are behind from the age of 6 or 7.
Claire, the issue of sentencing came up today as well. It's generally an issue of public controversy. Not all sentences, but particular sentences. We heard a little bit about that today.
We did, and I generally think that there seems to be a lot of response to that online. There is generally concern over sentences, particularly for, sexual abuse, for rape, that was brought up today. And I also think that there was a recognition of the work of the previous government in relation to domestic abuse. I think there was mention of Kuhn as well was raised, and the support there for people, and to continue that on and look at that area as well.
Okay, Barry Ward, the issue of sentencing, particularly in those areas Claire talked about, crimes against the person, including sexual assaults and the like. Sometimes people find it very difficult to understand how sentencing works. Do you think there's any need for clarity in that area?
I think there's a real problem with the fact that the vast majority of sentences that are complained about online by people who don't have all the information. When you consider the thousands and thousands and thousands of sentences are handed down by our criminal courts every year, the vast majority of them don't attract attention because they're right. Mm.
Sometimes the DPPs agree with those complaints and appeals those sentences.
Exactly, and that's the way the system works. When the system is wrong, the sentence is wrong, there's an opportunity either by the DPP to appeal its undue leniency or by a person who's got too harsh a sentence to appeal it, and there are structures in place for that, and it works. It generally works. But the reality is that when you pick a few sentences out of those many thousands of sentences and say, this was wrong, of course you're going to be right from time to time. And of course there are egregious sentences one way or the other, but they are not representative of the whole. And we are very lucky actually to have a corpus of judges who apply the law evenly and fairly without fear or favour, which is a really important part of our system. And it's why we don't have large numbers of miscarriages of justice.
Paul Gogarty, do you agree with that?
Yeah, for the superior courts have laid out different types of sentencing guidelines, and if there is leeway for a judge has to look at the circumstances and the severity and aggravating factors in relation to every type of sentence. The only way you can amend that is in terms of the legislation itself and put restrictions. We've seen movement, for example, in terms of violent assaults where people got suspended sentences. So maybe we have to be a little bit tighter in terms of what the parameters are that are set out to the judiciary, because obviously once it's allowed to carry out its independent role, we can't interfere, but we can in terms of the legislation for certain types of offences.
Okay, Donna Colera, any concerns on the sentencing front?
Certainly, yeah. Like, I mean, I think, you know, Barry, I suppose, makes a point, which is reasonable, that many judges make sure that their sentencing is scrupulous and adheres to everything that it should adhere to. But for the person whose daughter was raped, whose son was murdered, who suffered at the hands of somebody in a very serious crime, where a sentence that's handed down that seems just incomprehensible. Like, I mean, that pain is very significant. That's very, very difficult for those people to understand. How did the judge come to this conclusion? Some instances, maybe there's a logical conclusion. In some instances, it's hard to argue that there is. I negotiated a number of years ago with Charlie Flanagan in terms of the Judicial Council Bill, the requirement to have sentencing guidelines. It was something that I worked very hard at. I have to say I'm disappointed at how slowly the Judicial Council has moved in terms of their power to draft sentencing guidelines that would have a requirement to have regard to them. And to be honest, it's now several years since the passing of that legislation. We haven't seen a full set of sentencing guidelines come from the Judicial Council. I think that's regrettable. The implementation of this in Britain and in other countries saw that actually, generally speaking, and obviously you'll have to have exceptions, adherence to sentencing guidelines where they're laid down is quite strong and it does improve consistency. Unfortunately, the Judicial Council hasn't produced those kind of sentencing guidelines, despite the fact that they've had some time. I think that's regrettable and maybe requires consideration.
Okay, we're going to take another short break. Back in a minute.
The Late Debate with Cullum O'Mungon on RTE Radio 1.